Two of our friends have mothers who are getting close to death. One woman is 97 years old and the other one is 91. They've lived a long time compared to other people. 97, 91, that's pretty impressive. I think that both of these women have held on to two of the four most important jobs in the world, wife and mother. And they've kept that for a very, very long time. And even though they are now widows, the fact is they are still mothers. I know one of the women, but I don't know the other one. But I do, by knowing their children, have a sense of who these women are. I know them better than I would otherwise know them, simply because I do know their children. And both of the kids, one is a woman, one is a man, are committed to kindness and goodness. Both of them are thoughtful and respectful. I watch how they interact, not only with me, but with other people and with their children. They tell me about it, and I can hear it, I can see it, I know it to be true. And both of them seek to make situations in their family and as business people, outside of their families, better. I think they would have learned a lot of that from their mothers. That nurturing, caring, collecting, organizing kind of energy comes from mothers in a lot of cases. I want to talk about relationships. And this is going to be kind of like an outline, maybe that you would see in a classroom directory or college classes directory, a syllabus, or an outline, if you will, a high-altitude view. Now, there are millions of books written about relationships, and there's no way to do justice to it as a complete subject in one talk like this. But I want to touch upon a few points that I think could be valuable. So I'm calling today's talk Relationships 101. Here we go. Relationships are playthings. And the game of life is played through relationships. We do that early on as children. We play with things and people, and we recognize that relationships are playthings. That's really it. And you can recognize that play connotes fun. So relationships, done effectively, can be and should be fun. The way we interact with people and things, objects, toys, solid things, can be fun. All of our interactions with matter, energy, space, and time can be called relationships. Now, this subject of interacting with matter, energy, space, and time was dealt with in a previous Sunday talk, maybe a week or so ago. So feel free to download that from the website if that idea of interacting with matter, energy, space, and time, which is essentially life, intrigues you. If you look around at human activity, you can see that we've established sports such as tennis, ping pong, badminton, football, soccer, on and on and on and on, card games, all as games with differing relationships. There's a lot of confusion about the intentions of relationships. There's a lot of upheaval in the world today, politically, if you look around. You only talk about the Arab Spring and you see what's going on with Occupy Wall Street here in the United States and elsewhere, because people are very, very unhappy at the imbalanced state of relationships, primarily economic in this case, in other countries, Libya and Egypt and so on. It's political, but also it affects everybody economically as well. So people have become really tired and resistant and unwilling to allow the imbalanced state of relationships to persist. And so that's a lot of upheaval, a lot of rioting, a lot of groups, a lot of everybody trying to make that change occur. For some people, and this is part of the problem, relationships are all about domination and control. As their ability to dominate, overwhelm, and to control increase, their requirement to address the rules of decency that human beings would normally understand and maybe respect decrease. No need to do it. because might is right. Politically, if you look around the world as separate units, each country, you could see that the country that exhibits that behavior the most are the most powerful. The United States is a key example. You know, we invaded countries. We've got a couple of those invasions still draining our life force and our money and our young people's lives. And Russia was famous for it. That is the Soviet Union. You know, they were in Afghanistan and they've crushed other countries on their border, Eastern Europe. China does it. China does it with Tibet. England historically has done it with lots of countries, tried to do it to our country here, the colonies, and we threw that yoke off. Spain did it throughout Latin America and some parts of Africa. And you just go, wow, Portuguese did it too, in Goa and Brazil. And it's just, and you could just go, wow, might is right. Those relationships were all about extraction. Going in, taking what they want, domination, control, overwhelm. That's what they were all about. So if you think of a relationship as an interaction with another human being to get what you want, you'll be much like these imperialistic powers. It's about domination and control. You can imagine that there might be another point of view regarding relationships. Let's just think of one, and that could be kind of like in a tennis game, is we're going to volley not a ball back and forth, but expressions of energy, vibrations. We're going to send that back and forth, back and forth. We're going to volley like tennis players. Now, we can do it trying to damage or disturb or diminish the other player. We want to dominate them, or we could choose a higher level for our interaction, for our relationship. We could actually be interested in their improvement, our improvement, their improvement, our improvement, their improvement, our improvement in this game of sending energy back and forth between us and our partners in relationships. And if that energy is love, kindness, goodness, other values that we understand, then all of a sudden this relationship takes on a whole different energy, has a whole different complexion, whole different characteristics, and it's constructive because we're working together, we're cooperative, not competitive. Now you can look at the game of tennis and you go, those people are playing tennis, they're trying to win. Okay, all right, that's one of the intentions of playing games, is to be declared the winner. But actually, what most people are playing for is to be able to reach for a higher level of effectiveness, higher level of skill, a higher level of joy and exhilaration from being able to do things now that they couldn't do, you know, when they first began playing the game of relationship. It's like, oh, I'm better at it, I'm better at it. Which means not I'm making the other person feel less, is no, they're getting better and I'm getting better and they're getting better and I'm getting better. When we think of this, we could ask this question, are these relationships really tools to help us develop our awareness and our skills, and in that way give us the ability to generate this internally manifested sense of satisfaction, of excitement, of joy, of fulfillment? I think the answer is yes, but not everybody thinks so. Some people have a different point of view. I had a talented husband and wife couple work for me in San Diego, in the business that I was a partner in. They had different roles in the company. The guy was technical, and the wife was in sales. One of the challenges, though, is the woman was more talented. She was more energetic, and she was smarter. She was really quick thinker, and she was a really good decision maker. So one of their main problems in the relationship is that while she's operating at this different vibrational level, the husband was at a different level. And they belonged to a church. They decided to go to a church, and this church proposed this idea. According to their dogma, the man had dominion over the woman. In their relationship, it was his job to dictate all decisions regarding what they were going to do, when they were going to do it, how they were going to do it, all about his wants, all about his desires, and it was her job to obey. Now, the idea of a less capable person managing and controlling and deciding on their behaviors and a way to think of a more talented person, you can get that. Ooh, yeah, that could be a problem. And it was a problem. It was a problem. If you and I got into cars and we had some person who was less capable of driving the car than we were, but yet giving us directions and telling us what to do, what not to do, turn here, go, we're like, you know, after a while, that would be really, really not okay. And it wasn't okay for this couple. Their marriage ended up in divorce. So one of the fundamental forks in the road that has to be chosen in relationships 101 is this. Do I believe in helping my partner who helps me as I help my partner who helps me? This is kind of like people climbing a mountain. You know, one person ascends ahead of the other and marks the way and secures the way with pitons, and so then the next one comes up, gets equal to, and then advances up ahead and does the same thing, prepares that, and they kind of leapfrog in their climb in the mountain. Is that what we're talking about here? They take turns, and they use their skills, their talents, their abilities in order to make the way easier for their partner. Is that what we're talking about in a relationship? So that we can access the help and support that we need and want, and when our partner needs or wants support, we can provide that. The other fork in the road is labeled differently. It's labeled domination, control, being right at all costs, others hyphen obey. That's the rule. And so if you think your greatest happiness is going to come from dominating or controlling or undermining a partner's desires and strengths, that's a different fork in the road. Another concept in Relationships 101 is that relationships are like special mirrors. Each of us is like a special mirror. We reflect to our partners the environmental signals that we perceive, right, that come to us, and then we reflect them back. But we reflect them back according to our own internal materials, our own belief system, our own opinions, our own prejudices, our own experiences. So, you think of a mirror on the wall, you go, okay, there's a mirror on the wall, and if you paid more money for it, that means it's a higher quality, perhaps, and which says that it's made with a special reflective backing, and it's going to accurately reflect light, provided that the glass used in front of that backing is free from distortions. So, if the glass is really, really pure, really clear, free from distortions, that the light hitting that mirror is going to be reflected back accurately, without interference. It'll penetrate without interference, and it will come back without interference. People, us, we're like glass, except we think nobody can see through us. That is clearly not true. That's not true. If we were to observe a person astutely, just with a little bit of practice, we can easily see the distortions that they accept as normal for themselves in the way they behave, in the way they present themselves, in the identity that they've created and carry around thinking, this is me. Their glassness, if you will, allows more or less light to reach their spiritual core. That's what I'll call that reflective backing, that that light center that we have. And that's, depending on how much light gets back to that and is reflected back out to the object of our attention, to the partner in our relationships, we're going to have a different experience. In Relationships 101, it's helpful to have this knowledge. All disapproval is due to self-disapproval. All rejection is due to self-rejection. When we hurl disapproval at another, it looks like they're to blame. They didn't do something, or they did something, or et cetera, et cetera. And they deserve what we're throwing at them. That's a misunderstanding that can destroy relationships. When we hurl disapproval in our relationship, and we notice ourselves doing it, that which takes a level of awareness, we can back up in time. Back, how much? Back up 3 seconds, 30 seconds, 3 minutes, 30 minutes, 3 hours maybe. And it's certain that we're going to find a point when we took in an environmental signal and manufactured disapproval of ourselves with it, and then to relieve the discomfort of what we just manufactured for ourselves, that unhappiness, that static, we're now going to throw it at somebody else. We become imbalanced because of the way we just interpreted that environmental signal about ourselves, and in order to get back into emotional, energetic balance, we're going to grab some of that disapproval and throw it at our partner. Doesn't it sound a lot like the stuff that we heard about the Greek mythology? You know, the angry, petulant, fickle, judgmental Greek god throwing lightning at human beings, storms, and trying to get them to do something just because they're having some conflict with other gods? Sounds similar to me. I said that we're all special mirrors. By that I mean we don't just reflect light the way it comes to us. We translate that light. We translate those environmental signals. We translate them uniquely. And then we reflect them back to others uniquely. To continue this glass in the mirror metaphor, think of this. Each one of us is glass. But the glass is unique. Why? Because the ingredients that were added by others and by ourselves and accepted by us are what has constructed our glass, our mirroring capabilities. We've all had different experiences, different thoughts, different feelings. We've taken different steps. We did things. That is, we took certain actions and didn't take other certain actions. We went here, we went there. We had different energy exchange experiences from conception up to about 2 seconds ago. And all of these things, all of these inputs coming to us were interpreted uniquely. And conclusions were drawn by us uniquely. So everything about us is unique. You could think that in a childhood of abuse, if we had that kind of an experience, we would have learned to make our glass mercury, to make it more opaque, so less light could penetrate. Because the resistance to the light, you know, our interpretation of these environmental signals coming from other people, is that these things hurt. They hurt. They make us feel smaller. They're damaging to us. They dominate us. They overwhelm us. They discourage us. I need to try to block this stuff. And that protective strategy is standard. It comes with the territory. It's a way we try to protect ourselves from incoming energy. Unfortunately, in the long term, it doesn't really help us. The fork in the road for this concept about mirroring is whether in relationships we want to reflect back to our partner their finest qualities, so that their glass becomes clearer, purer, freer from distortion, less protected, less murky, less opaque, less filled with fear, while they do the same thing for us. Or do we see our job as reflecting back to them their faults, their flaws, their unusual habits, their annoying little behaviors. And we would do that because we are believers in constructive criticism, which, frankly, is kind of like a Trojan horse loaded with domination and control and judgment, and we try to sneak it in like we're doing them a favor. Oh, here's a gift. Here's a gift. We're doing it for your good. All of that stuff is disguised. We disguise it in helpfulness or in a higher-minded thing, intention. I'm doing it for you, I'm doing it for you. That's nonsense. It's toxic to relationships. The next concept in Relationships 101 is the give and take. Give and take. Are relationships for giving, or are relationships for taking? Or are they for both, giving and taking, in some kind of balanced state that varies from moment to moment? You could say, and people do say this, it's in our nature to take, take, take. Gee, here's evidence. Look at an infant taking milk from its mother, depending on the mother, and demanding that the mother feed it, take care of it, change it, hold it, put it to bed, meet all of its need. Infants take. Well, you could look at it that way, if you want to look at it superficially. You could also say, the baby is giving to the parents. What are they giving? Bunch of stuff. First of all, the supreme opportunity to play the game of life. What's the game of life? Delivering the truth of existence, those nine items, delivering those nine items to other living things is so fantastic. It's really the whole purpose of life, is to be able to receive it, have it work in us, and then deliver it to others. A baby gives parents that opportunity to play the game of life at the highest, most valuable level. On a real physical level, a nursing baby helps the mother's body recover from the birth process faster. The mother's body heals faster because the baby calls forth energy from her body, causes all kinds of things to go in, and so the uterus, the rest of her body involved in carrying that baby and delivering that baby, come back into a normal state faster because that baby is demanding food, helping the mother call forth energy from divine consciousness to heal her body. Another gift that the baby gives is being proof positive that miracles exist. If anybody can look at a newborn's fingernails and fingers and toes and not go into awe at the design by divine consciousness of our species, wow, that would need to be worked on. That is such a miracle. So astounding to see those little teeny fingers and toes. It's like hard to believe that's coincidental, accidental, it's just, fate or something, and it's not a design. Hello. Yeah, I don't think so. Babies and other creations, and you don't have to have a physical baby come out of your womb to have a baby. Because we create in a lot of different ways. Businesses are like babies. Causes are like babies. Works of art are like babies. All kinds of forms of expression are like babies because they call us to draw on the divine for energy that we uniquely translate and produce these expressions. Infants, art, business, all kinds of other things related to the truth of existence. What's nice about this, babies and other forms of expression, is they give us purpose. They become our purposes. And those purposes are what we use as reasons to call forth from the divine the energy that we need the inspiration, the insights, the stamina, the you name it, that we need in order to grow the seed of our thought into a full-blown, physically manifested concept. I kind of see these purposes really serve us to access the divine pump. I like this idea of these old hand farm pumps from long ago, where you prime the pump and move the handle up and down, and then draw forth water from Mother Earth. I think we do the same thing by having purpose. And then moving the handle is like having intention and will. And we call forth this energy necessary for our creations from divine consciousness. I see that relationships give us a context, a playing field, if you will, in which we can deliver divine consciousness, the energy, these high vibration energies, to other people. What could be a better job than that? To get divine energy, translate it uniquely, and deliver it to other people for their benefit. Sounds mighty, mighty good to me. The language used in relationships is important to understand. A lot of people use words with a variety of meanings and oftentimes don't know what the word means, but they use it because they've heard it and that sort of thing, so it leads to a lot of misunderstanding. It's important to know, too, language involves more than just words. It includes facial expressions, you know, body language, body positions, the tone of our voice, all kinds of things. And, as the deliverers of language, our way of being. That's almost the state of consciousness of the deliverer or the transmitter, our way of being. If our way of being is scornful, listen to these words. I love you. And you know if that's being delivered by a person whose way of being is scornful, it's going to be so different, so less nice, so less wonderful than if the way of being of the person delivering the words, I love you, was one of tenderness and caring. The words are identical. Three words, I love you. But the way of being changes everything. And that word, love, is used so indiscriminately in relationships, it pays to really get a grasp of it. Sometimes it's like a magic phrase, open sesame. It's used, I'll say, oftentimes by people when they're trying to get access to the treasure that they desire. And that can be men looking for sex, or it could be women looking for something similar, or material things. Both genders can misuse that word and use it as a ploy to get what we want. In some cases, it's used to disguise lust, so the other person's defenses don't go up and they don't try to protect themselves from the coming movement of energy that is sought. And then sometimes the word love is just a word and it has really no meaning attached to it. It's just thrown around, could be any kind of meaningless word for that matter. But sometimes love has a lot of meaning. And I like this definition that a mentor explained to me some years ago. He thought, and after thinking about it, I'm convinced he's accurate in this description, that love has three main ingredients. And I'm going to talk about these. Attention, respect, and appreciation. So, we say we're in love with our partner, I think it makes sense to question this. Are we willing to put our attention on the other person and really see and hear and feel them? Are we really getting them? Are we willing to do that? Are they important enough to interrupt the attention that we're giving to something else, a newspaper or some project or a sporting event on TV or some other activity going on that we're currently directing our attention to? Are we available to give them our attention? And if we realize that attention is really like energetic or vibrational food. It's like mother's milk, but on a vibrational level. It's like water and food, but on a vibrational level. It is essential to human beings living, and higher life forms too, like animals, that can respond to attention. Are we willing to interrupt the attention that we're delivering one place and deliver it to our partner in relationship? Respect is this idea that we don't need to change the person that we are seeing or hearing or feeling. We can respect their unique ingredients, right? I mean, their ingredients are unique, just like ours. All their thoughts, all their experiences, all their inputs, all the life that they had growing up has made them unique. Unique. And so our set of rules does not necessarily fit them. They've got their own opinions, own judgments, own prejudices, their own values, and it is up to them to have them. And by respecting them, we are willing to allow them to be the way they be instead of needing them to change. And that's the height of respect. The real value of that is that when we are respectful of the other person, they can become more revealing. They can show their inner, deeper selves to us. They're more honest. They're less defensive. Because if we're respectful, we are less threatening. We won't attack. We're just willing to let them be in their expression. And that threat of attack decreases as we increase our level of respect. Appreciation is the third aspect of love in this definition. And this is recognizing the variety and the uniqueness of them and ourselves instead of judging them or ourselves. That's a common thing that goes on all the time. Well, I'm not like so. No, that's true. You're not like so-and-so. So-and-so is so-and-so. You're not like so-and-so. You're like you. You're unique. And when we can invest our energy in looking at them and finding things in their characteristics, in their behaviors, in the way they be and do and have that appeals to us, we're appreciating them. And the more we invest our energy in finding things about our partners and our relationships to appreciate, we know that, most people do anyway, that as we appreciate more, more things are attracted into our experience to appreciate. This is, if we said this to a farmer, if you nurture your crops, you're going to get a bigger yield. He would say, that's not new news to me. If we nurture the things that we appreciate in our partners, we're going to get a bigger yield. It's better for them. It's better for us. They can grow in the direction that they want to grow in. They can express their uniqueness because they're not always being cut back, cut down, or diminished by criticism or judgment. Sowing love in this fashion can do wonders for relationships and the people in them. The sower and the reaper and the reaper and the sower, everybody benefits from this. It's fantastic. So let's go back to the 97-year-old woman and the 91-year-old woman and their children. And this brings me to the final concept for today in Relationship 101, memory. Memory. We can remember hurts, and we can remember kindnesses. And using our remembers to hold on to hurts and blames as with this idea, this mistaken human idea that if I hold on to this hurt, it's going to protect me and prevent me from being hurt in the future. No, actually that's not true. That's like walking around with pain as a reminder, I don't like pain. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't really need all that much reminding to know that pain hurts and it's less desirable than a whole bunch of alternatives. And by holding on to hurts, we magnetize ourselves to more hurts. we dwell on those, we nourish them, we feed those hurts, and guess what? The yield is liable to be more hurts. Using memory to hold on to energy that we can use to justify this erroneous belief that we're right, they're wrong, they shouldn't have done that, they should have done something else, it's destructive. It destroys people. It destroys relationship. I know of clients who have died because they wouldn't let go of these hurts that have persisted for years and years and years, and they used it, and it toxified their entire body and lives, and frankly, their other relationships too. I had a friend in San Diego, Janice Marie, who, she's the first person who ever taught me how to do muscle testing, but she also dealt with individual coaching, and she had a relationship class that she taught. And I recall her saying this: you have two choices with regard to relationships. You can either be right, or you can have a relationship. That's it. One or the other. Be right or have a relationship. Decide on what's most valuable to you, most important to you, and then follow through on it. If you want to be right, that means there's this tendency to make the other person wrong in a relationship. And frankly, you can imagine what happens when you're stepping on the other person because he or she is wrong all the time. That person is going to dwindle, and if they have a survival instinct, they're going to leave that relationship in order to prevent themselves from being killed or squashed to death. Be right or be in relationship. And if you can understand what your role in a relationship is to help the other person, if you believe this to be true, that is, help the other person grow into a fullness of their potential. Not to be a replica of you or somebody you knew, but in fact, to be them. And so these children of the 97 and 91-year-old can use their memory to go back in time over their 50 or 60 years and find those memories that were endearing, of kindnesses, of expressions of love and support, the things that they are willing to put their attention on that showed that their mothers exhibited respect and appreciation for them. And now here, these two children, as fully grown adults, can put their attention on their mothers and dwell upon those events, those interactions, those energy exchange experiences in which there was attention, respect, and appreciation. If we can do that with our partners in all our relationships, with our parents, even after they've deceased, you know, we can still go and interact with their memories. And we can improve their memories by the way we use our memory. And go, you know what, I'm not going to dwell on that burnt toast or, you know, that comment. I'm going to focus on those higher vibration deliveries of the truth of existence when they were functioning at their optimum, and I was interpreting at my optimum, and I was accepting at my optimum. Those are the things I want to use my memory for. And when we do that, we're going to find ourselves and the people we're thinking of now standing in this stream of love, the stream of life that's flowing, this energy that we're calling forth from the divine when we choose the way to think, the stream of love, baptizing ourselves in the stream of love. That's kind of a cool image. It's like, yeah. This higher possible energy that we can bring into relationships makes for a whole different experience for us. I would like to end the service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer in letter 8 of Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.